put the administration of the colonies increasingly in the hands of people sent out from the Iberian Peninsula, born there, and hopefully increasingly talented and efficient. So there was some political change on the eve of the long 19th century, but it had some diverse implications. Something of a Latin American culture began to be forged in the colonial period as well. Obviously, imports from Western Europe were predominant, at least officially, with the spread of Catholicism pushed urgently by a series of Catholic missions, by the importation of architectural and artistic forms, often around the religion, so that the center cities of many colonial cities in Latin America had a very European air. But mixing with those imported factors were important traditional uses of color, the veneration of local gods and goddesses that were now transformed into worship of some of the saints. This was a mixed culture that began to gain great strength from its mixture, just as the population itself, after the Columbian Exchange eased, increasingly mixed people of European, native, and sometimes African origin in various ways. Even Latin American family forms reflected some distinctive traditions. Officially, Europeans, priests, and governors urged that European standards be applied to families. But in fact, partly because of colonial sexual exploitation of native women, large numbers of illegitimate children were born, and this remained a characteristic of Latin American families beneath the top layer, although elite men were frequently involved, on into the contemporary period. This sounds perhaps a little bit harsher than it actually turned out to be, because correspondingly, the popular culture developed mechanisms by which illegitimate children could be appropriately cared for, sheltered, etc. But this was not exactly a European family set of family standards, even as officially the recommendations sounded very Western. The big first event, in some ways the shaping event, of Latin American experience in the long 19th century, of course involved the Wars of Independence that stretched primarily between 1810 and 1820. These independence movements reflected firm convictions organized around liberal and nationalist beliefs imported from Western Europe and the United States, and inspired indeed by United States and French revolutionary example. The goals were, obviously, national independence from Spanish, Portuguese, although the Brazilian case is more complicated, from Spanish control, but also the formation of liberal political states that would have parliaments, constitutions that would not be monarchies, that would at least have some defense of individual rights. There was normally, on the part of the leaders of the independence movements, some hope to curb the powers of the Catholic Church without necessarily overturning the Church. This was, again, a liberal nationalist movement, much in the mold of similar efforts in Western Europe and North America. The social base of the independence movements was usually fairly shallow. Most of the leadership was Creole, that is, people of European origin born in Latin America, and only vague hints, if at all, existed of more popular support for these national risings. Correspondingly, although in a few cases social measures resulted, such as the abolition of slavery in Mexico, correspondingly, the social results of these independence movements were very limited. These were political movements. They did successfully chase the Spaniards out, in part because Spain was itself so distracted by the Napoleonic Wars and subsequent political turmoil back home, also because the British and other European agents were eager to protect these independence movements for very selfish reasons. These movements were political successes, but they did not overturn the basic ruling forces in Latin American society that revolved around the church, the landlord class, and increasingly the military. After independence was successfully achieved, during the 1820s, 30s, and on into the 40s, many Latin American nations exhibited what we call new nations problems, a limited concept but a useful one that first gets illustrated by the Latin American experience, but then also by experiences later in the 20th century in many parts of Africa, Southeast Asia, etc. And here's the argument, and again, it's a perfectly factual one as far as Latin America was concerned. New nations can successfully form once colonial overlords are chased out, but they will characteristically have a number of problems. First of all, identifying experienced political leadership. One of the grievances of the independence leaders was the fact that they had been so excluded from participation in government in the 18th century under the colonial Spanish reforms. But by the same token, there just weren't very many people that had actual experience in running a state. So here's the first of the new nations problems. Second, the formation of new nations, the attack on the colonial overlords, normally leads to at least a brief period of economic dislocation. And in this case, in the Latin American case, this period was exacerbated by the importation of British industrial goods now that Spanish tariff protection and military protection had been withdrawn. Economic hardship would be the second characteristic new nations problem, and it hit home very hard in the Latin American case. Disputes over political legitimacy would be a predictable third problem. Who's supposed to rule? What political constitution actually should be adopted? While most of the independence movements were hostile to monarchies, certain political forces, for example in Mexico, really tried hard to find a new monarch because that's the system that made sense to them. Quarrels about political legitimacy could also have to do with the territorial integrity of the new states. Most nationalist leaders in Latin America hoped for fairly big states on the United States model to the north, thus the United States of Central America, or the effort to form a Gran Colombia. But most of these more ambitious combinations fell apart because nobody actually recognized the legitimacy of this territory, and more parochial interests predominated. And in the process, there would be considerable political turmoil until the boundaries were settled upon and became somewhat traditional. And finally, although this was not an overwhelming issue in Latin America, there's also the question of external boundaries. Who's going to claim what territory as two new nations collide? Border wars, in other words, are a final component of new nations phenomena. The results of new nations problems show in two characteristic outcomes. First, a pronounced tendency toward political instability. This is a familiar part of 19th and even 20th century Latin American political history. Regimes, leadership changed a lot. Mostly, it was leadership change, that is, coup d'etat that would bring one person in instead of another. But sometimes real political principles were involved. There was an ongoing tension between conservative and liberal forces in Latin American politics. The conservatives bent on protecting church and landlords. The liberals interested possibly in a little bit of social reform, certainly some education, certainly some limitations on the church, certainly some effort at a parliamentary system that would give representation at least to the upper classes. These quarrels, as well as purely personal rivalries, helped create frequent political instability. And along with this came a frequent tendency to what in Latin American history is known as caudillismo, the selection of individual dictators whose authoritarian rule at least showed some hope of cutting through the instability, of cutting through the quarrels. So, Latin American political history in much of the 19th century, after the successful wars of independence, was marked by frequent regime changes, frequent periods of personal authoritarianism, but also a deeper-seated tension between liberals and conservatives who might oscillate in power and who might both provide actual sources of authoritarian rule. Liberals perhaps a little less often than conservatives, but they could have their caudillos as well. Interestingly, and pretty obviously, at first blush, this aspect of Latin American history contrasts interestingly, with the experience of the United States, also a new nation, but not one in which some of these new nations phenomena occurred to the same degree. Different colonial experience had given more North Americans some experience in government. Economic problems existed after the American Revolution, but they were less conclusive. There were certainly quarrels about political boundaries, and it took some time to forge the actual agreement on what the United States were to become, but these problems were simply less paralyzing than to the South, and obviously the results would shape a rather different political experience. Lest this sound too self-congratulatory, it's also important to note that the United States would have one granddaddy of a new nation's problem, because when the nation was formed, there was no agreement on what was to happen to slavery. And this new nation's problem would crop up in a massive civil war, a far worse period of turmoil in concentrated fashion than any of the Latin American states faced. But the political experience was undeniably different. The long 19th century was also an important period for the development of Latin American culture. Two or three points here need to be emphasized. In the first place, and this is perhaps the most basic point, the long 19th century saw Latin America emerge from very tentative cultural expressions, except when brought directly by Europeans, to the potential for creating literary currents, artistic currents, etc., of their own. A large number of reasonably talented and successful Latin American novelists, for example, emerged in the 19th century. They understandably exploited some characteristic Latin American themes, talking about frontiers, talking about ethnic diversity. At the same time, these novelists and other artists were, for the most part, strongly influenced by literary and intellectual patterns developed particularly in Western Europe, to some extent in the United States. This is then first a period of a first flowering of Latin American high culture, not simply culture controlled by European-derived missions and church officials, but also a period in which Western influences retain a very strong hold. Increasing Western cultural influences showed in some other respects that go beyond high culture, although they still have some contact with them. In many Latin American countries, cities were expanded or created very much upon European architectural lines. I had the experience once of seeing a friend from Argentina visit me in Paris. It was his first visit, and his first reaction was, "My goodness, they've made Paris look just like Buenos Aires." He had the connection right, but he had the chronological priority reversed. Latin American center cities, particularly in places like Argentina, were deliberately created along European models. A new urban middle class emerged, and we've touched on this actually before, that increasingly espoused other European values, in part because so many wealthy Latin Americans routinely traveled to Western Europe as part of their acclimatization and education. These political values could include the new public health efforts, efforts to insist on European sanitary standards against the presumed barbarism or insufficient civilization of the lower classes. It could include efforts to impose increasingly Western standards on existing native populations, the tension between liberal reformers in the cities and Native Americans was frequently quite great, which was one reason that Latin American liberals, even by 1914, almost never advocated political democracy. Their notion of politics needed to be restricted to a smaller group of voters who could be counted upon to pursue proper standards. Another reform target was prostitution. I mentioned earlier the increasing white slavery scare of the late 19th century, which particularly was directed toward places like Argentina. Argentine reformers, in turn, were acutely embarrassed by any notion that Argentina did not measure up to Western standards of control over prostitute activities. And again, reforms were introduced. Increasing European immigration, again, to places like Argentina, Uruguay, Chile, to some extent Brazil, also furthered an increasing European influence, although this was much stronger in some parts of the South American continent than in others. Increasing interest in European sports or American sports was another area in which Latin American culture seemed to be changing in a Western direction. But along with these urban and sometimes upper-class manifestations that seemed to be amalgamating Latin American culture with that of Western Europe and the United States, with the exception of a few regionally specific themes, important groups of people of Native American, Mestizo, or African origin also continued to defend popular religious traditions and amalgamations that reflected a somewhat different rhythm, advocated and exhibited certain dance styles that retained a much more distinct and original Latin American flavor. Again, this was a culture that was gaining increasing expression. It was not entirely homogeneous, and the results could be quite creative as well as expressing a certain degree of tension. Any discussion of Latin America in the long 19th century has to note, and it's a theme that we've evoked in general already, has to note the increasing peripheralization of the Latin American economy. There were some changes here over time. Initial economic dislocation after the successful independence movements was followed by the middle of the 19th century by some recovery of a certain degree of prosperity in many parts of Latin America. But the later decades, 1870 or so onward, of Latin American history were marked by increasing peripheralization that showed in a number of ways, both old and new. The old ways, and the point here is pretty obvious, involved the increasing number of peoples and territories who were locked into the production of export goods, including new ones, some of them not fully suitable to the Latin American environment and capable of causing a great deal of environmental damage, one of the new effects of the world economy as it intensified its impact on places like Brazil. But the crops now included coffee. This is the great age of the rise of Latin American coffee production. It included, of course, silver and sugar. But it also now included, from places like Chile, increasing production of minerals, important for industrial activity to the north or back in Europe, minerals like copper, and the intervention of large outside industrial combinations for mineral production, for food production, like United Fruit Company operating in Central America, was an increasing factor in the Latin American economy. Increasing numbers and segments of the Latin American economy were thus bent on producing goods for the export market, dependent on very cheap labor, not for the most part now slave labor, but dependent on very cheap labor organized in various ways, and increasingly producing goods that in turn would support imports of more expensive processed goods or would produce the revenues of an upper class that was increasingly oriented to spend its money on leisure activities, for example, in Western Europe, rather than plowing them back into regional economic development. All this is familiar enough. The new component, and it became quite visible in places like Venezuela at the end of the 19th century, the new component was the graphic illustration of how hard it was, even for dedicated, sensible reformers, to pull Latin America out of this peripheral relationship. The temptation, obviously, and a perfectly sensible temptation, was to try to figure out how one might industrialize elements of the Latin American economy. And indeed, increasing numbers of factories were established. But to establish a factory, one had normally to, at least at the outset, to import machinery in from Western Europe or the United States. The question then arose, fine, where do we get the money? Where do we get the foreign currency in order to do this? Well, the short-run answer was we will borrow. And the source of borrowing was characteristically European or American banks. Anybody who's looked at the details of Latin American history in the 19th century, particularly the second half of the 19th century, will recognize the frequency with which outside investors from Britain, France, or the United States tried to muscle in on Latin American development in order to make sure that their debts could be collected. The key issue here was indeed the formation of increasing international indebtedness that simply made the weakness, the dependent status of the Latin American economy more visible, more hard fundamentally to remedy. In order to pay for the importation of outside equipment, the obvious recourse was to increase the production of export products that could earn foreign currency. But two things happened when this avenue, again, a perfectly sensible avenue, nobody's behaving stupidly here. We're talking about sensible, reform-minded leaders, usually liberal, sometimes authoritarian, but really interested in pulling their areas out of economic dependency. The usual recourse, in addition to borrowing, because after all, ultimately one had to repay the loans in some fashion, or the Europeans and Americans would muscle in, the recourse was to expand the production of goods like coffee, which, for example, began to occur in places like Colombia and Venezuela. To expand coffee production, one pressed production farther and farther into the interior. More acreage, more product. But to get this production to market, you also had to develop feeder railroads. Again, a sensible, modern-sounding economic device. So railroads increasingly cut in from the export ports into the interior in ways that would allow this increased production actually to reach market. But to build the railways, one had to buy stock from, again, the industrial societies, another kind of expensive export that could, and often did, simply deepen the economic morass. And finally, and this began to be a huge problem by the end of the 19th century, and it would continue to our own time for parts of Latin America and many other parts of the world, this very sensible effort to increase coffee or whatever production in order to earn increasing foreign currency to pay off debts and hopefully get out of this economic trap, this increased production would drive down prices. So many regions in Latin America and elsewhere were now trying to grow coffee or other characteristic tropical products in order to pull themselves out of economic dependency that prices dropped and the goal of escaping the economic pincers of dependency actually became increasingly unrealizable. Not every Latin American society suffered these problems equally. Argentina, with its beef exports, actually enjoyed a certain degree of real prosperity in the later 19th century, although not one that led to a fully articulated pattern of industrial development. There was variety, and certainly individual enterprises could succeed and even prosper. But the general problem was real, and again, the points are twofold. Economic dependency expanded as a framework for much Latin American economic activity. And the problems involved in dependency, particularly with the addition of this deep international debt, the problems involved tended to deepen as well. Two points in conclusion. One a clear point, the other sort of a question. First of all, the developments in Latin America illustrate obviously the variety of historical experiences that a major society could have in the long 19th century. The issues that we've just concluded concerning economic dependency might seem almost formulaic, though again there were some new elements even here. But along with economic dependency could come significant political innovation, not only the achievement of independence, but the emergence of new kinds of political movements, some interesting back and forth in terms of political control, ultimately some capacity to develop things like at least hints of a beginning on new educational systems, which was pushed, for example, by reformers in Mexico. The variety of developments, when you look at politics, culture, as well as economy, the variety is impressive. We don't want to get trapped in examination of economic dependency alone and forget that this was not the be-all and end-all of historic possibilities during the long 19th century. The question, I think, is equally interesting, and it's not my question. I actually, as a non-specialist on Latin America, would have hesitated to raise it. But Latin Americanists themselves sometimes debate the experiences of the long 19th century and earlier colonial precedents around this question. Was Latin America a Western civilization? On the plus side, in other words, for the affirmative, and as an indication that this is not simply an artificial or imperialistic structure, on the affirmative side would be obviously many aspects of Latin American high culture that we've talked about, where the European Western orientation was quite clear, where there was indeed increasingly a Latin American contribution to a common Western intellectual enterprise. Against this, however, even on the cultural front, was the extent to which Latin American developments tended to be somewhat stronger on what we might call the humanities side than the science side. I don't mean there was no science in 19th century Latin America, but it was not a characteristic strength. It was not a major emphasis, for example, of the new universities being established. So even on the cultural side, where the Western tinge is greatest, the issue of correspondence is somewhat complicated. And certainly on the side of popular culture, even larger questions arise, as Latin America, again, was home to a number of vigorous popular religious movements that differed considerably from their European counterparts, though sometimes expressing some European influence even here. The political front is just plain mixed. It is vital to remember that there were clear Western political ideals and goals in Latin American politics around liberalism and nationalism. This was true early in the 19th century, and the strength of these movements persisted. The extent to which conservatives in Latin America fought for church and army, you could see echoes of this in European politics as well. But the balance was somewhat different. The instability was somewhat greater, with a couple of European exceptions. And it's important to remember, although perhaps at the level of detail, that even Latin American liberalism, though certainly linked to its Western cousins, had some distinctive features, for example, in being much more reluctant to embrace political democracy because of some of the special conditions of Latin American society and ethnic makeup. And finally, of course, when you get to the level of economic patterns and resultant social classes, the picture does not look particularly Western at all. The answer to the question, is Latin American civilization Western, is clearly mixed. It is to some extent. The question is a legitimate one. It can help organize some of the comparisons that Latin American experiences should be subjected to. But there are some complexities as well that reflect earlier traditions, and that reflect some of the other new additions to the Latin American experience during the long 19th century.
Lecture 28, China and Japan, 19th Century Pressures.
Our discussion today focuses on comparing Japanese and Chinese developments in the long 19th century, frankly, particularly from the 1840s, 50s onward. The comparison is interesting in several respects. A number of societies can be brought together to help examine how 19th century factors were shaped by particular experiences. I've already suggested, for example, that comparing India and China in terms of economic, political, etc. change in the 19th century is intriguing. China and the Ottoman Empire are often compared. Both hesitated at reform, although China much more than the Ottoman Empire. Both failed, at least by 1914, really to come to terms with the industrial economy and the military power of the West. Japan and Russia constitute an interesting comparison. Here are the two societies, fundamentally non-Western,